Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dallas Keuchel, an early advantage birdie, trying to put together back-to-back outstanding starts for the Braves tonight. So 1-2 pitch, and inside corner froze him. Keuchel got the call. Margot's rung up. First strikeout for Dallas with a 2-2 count. And here it is. Swing and a miss, a sweeping breaking ball. And Hosmer didn't get it. And Keuchel with three strikeouts in the third inning. Double play ball. That'll be the second hit into by Mejia. And Keuchel is out of the fourth inning. As Hosmer digs in the pitch. Bouncing ball. Keuchel's going to be out of it. Another ground ball out. Sends us to the eighth inning. Back-to-back games with 13 ground outs for the unflappable Dallas Keuchel tonight.
From the Kia Studios in Midtown Atlanta, this is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Good morning. Happy Saturday with you here with Pelagic as we take you through the morning here on a Saturday, the 13th day of July 2019. And you heard, courtesy of Fox Sports South, another masterful outing from the Braves. Dallas Keuchel continuing to pay the dividends of the $13 million that they signed him for earlier this season. As the Braves defeat the San Diego Padres 5-3, they get off to the right foot to kick off the second half of the Major League Baseball season after the All-Star break ended last night out west. A bit unfair, I would say, although if you're going to have a West Coast trip at any point in time, you like to have it with a couple of days off in advance. The fact that they don't necessarily have to deal with the rigors of traveling out west until, of course, the end of the All-Star break. So that at least gives them a little bit of an advantage going in. Of course, they'll backtrack their way through the Midwest, going to Milwaukee for three, and then, of course, coming back here for the all-important four-game set against the Washington Nationals. But the Braves, as you mentioned, Keuchel, seven innings, one run, six hits. The big thing that he had was the fact that, like Chip Carey said, he did not have a fly ball out the entire game. 13 ground ball outs recorded by Keuchel. Amazing that he comes out and gives you that kind of effort. Third consecutive game that he had seven innings pitched in it. And, of course, the rest of it came when the Braves had the long ball going.
2-1 pitch. Swing and a high fly ball walloped right center field. He begins the second half with an oppo bang. Home run number 19 for Josh Donaldson, and the Braves strike first in the first. High fly ball belted right field. It's a two-homer night. 20 home runs for Josh Donaldson. Both the other way, birdie, and Atlanta extends the lead. It's now 5-1.
Josh Donaldson with a pair of home runs. Again, the call from Chip Carey on Fox Sports South last night. Also, Ronald Acuna went deep with a big tape measure shot. His fifth home run with 102 miles an hour exit velocity as the Braves incredibly continue to hit the long ball in a place that really wasn't necessarily known for the long ball. The only other long ball happened thanks to the home team with Manny Machado, a sixth-inning solo shot to lead off against Keuchel. But the Braves win, and they maintain their six-game lead over Washington in the National League East. The Phillies now 7.5 back after they lost last night. So Atlanta gets on the right foot here to start the second half. Donaldson, with those two home runs, drove in four overall. As you mentioned, Keuchel, seven innings, one run, six hits, four walks, five Ks. And his manager, Brian Snitker, talked about Dallas's outing, which continues to show why they signed him.
I mean, fastball command's been really, really good, so just kind of trying to ride that. But I was fortunate enough to attack the zone early and get him swinging, and you know that really made him conscious of early in the count pitches. And I mean, when you get him kind of rocking back and forth, it helps out a lot. And afforded me the luxury to kind of maneuver my way around the lineup there the last couple innings.
That is the unflappable Dallas Keuchel. And it's weird, you know, I found this interesting during the offseason with him and with Kimbrel both not being signed. And, you know, you can't put a price on a good pitcher. That, in my mind, is kind of what I don't understand, why those guys waited so long. And I know the reasoning behind them not being signed was because of the draft pick compensation that went alongside them for the longest time because of the qualifying offer, and teams didn't want to give that up. And I almost wonder if this is something that that could maybe go away with the next CBA, because if this continues to happen and guys continue to go unsigned that late in the offseason, then maybe there's something to be done because of that. But it also reinforces the point that I've made over the last week or so, in that I don't think the best operation for the Braves for the trade deadline is to go out and get a reliever. I know that the people want to shore up the bullpen. I know Jackson gave up another run last night in the ninth inning. Still picked up his 15th save with two strikeouts around the run. ERA is now 2.80. And Sobotka gave up a run as well. But in my mind, if you look at the Braves from the standpoint of what will give them the best opportunity to use your assets to win in October, if you're going to give up assets, go out and get a starting pitcher. Of course, the rumors yesterday were from our Paul Crane reporting basically that Trevor Bauer is the latest name that is en vogue when it comes to the Braves' potential interests. Of course, he's reporting that the Braves would need to give up two prospects in addition to one of their crown jewels. And in my mind, I almost feel like if you're going to give that much up to go to Trevor Bauer, despite the fact that he's got arbitration stuff left, if you're giving up Allard and two other prospects, I think the price tag is too high for Trevor Bauer. Because Bauer is a guy who has not only time left arbitration-wise, but he has said more often than not, he doesn't necessarily want to sign a long-term deal anywhere, even with his own team. He has said he'd rather go year to year, prove his worth on a yearly basis, and continue to increase his yearly compensation as the year goes on, or as his career goes on, I should say. So if you're looking to try and get somebody who can benefit you beyond this year and you're giving up a prospect, then I would go get Madison Bumgarner. I mean, that's a guy with proven October experience. A guy who, you know, while he is on the downslope of his career age-wise, still knows how to pitch. The team is awful. And because of that, I do believe that you are getting fair value back. And I think you got a guy who can win you a World Series. Now, if you go get Will Smith, I don't know if that necessarily inspires me. If you go get Shane Green, I don't think that inspires me. You need to get somebody who is going to win you a World Series if you're giving up an asset. You need somebody who you can put in that rotation behind Keuchel and behind Soroka, who you can count on, or in front of Keuchel and Soroka, ideally, who you could count on to pitch multiple games in a series, not someone who just takes care of the ninth inning. And again, the big point that I don't necessarily like either from that standpoint is the fact that if you get somebody who is an eighth inning guy, and that pushes Luke Jackson into the eighth inning, I think that completely rattles him and takes him out of commission, in my mind, for possibly being a closer for your team in the long run. Because I think, you know, these pitchers are so fragile-minded. I just don't necessarily agree with messing with their mind that way. 404-741-0929 is the phone number. We can also take some calls on that, how you feel about the Braves' opening second-half victory, what you want them to do with the trade deadline, and, of course, Your thoughts on how their offense continued to surge yesterday. Here's Brian Snitker talking about Donaldson, who, it's funny, he was very much getting the boo birds and early on this season, not necessarily getting a lot of love, but he has given it back here lately.
Yeah, it's just good to see him come back from, you know, taking 4 days off and just hit two, you know, screamers like that. We've seen him earlier when he gets hot. He's that kind of guy that can carry you.
Braves have won 22 out of their last 30 games dating back to the 7th of June. Keuchel has allowed 5 earned runs while totaling 21 and one-third innings over his past 3 starts, all going 7 innings. The only other Braves starter, like we said earlier in the show, that has a 7-inning outing other than Keuchel is Soroka, who ironically did so on June the 7th, the day that Keuchel signed his 1-year deal. So if you're looking for a potential reason why starting pitcher is the better way of going, that is the reason why, because you do not have somebody who you can count on to get deep in ball games. I don't know if you can count on Teron. I sure as heck know you can't count on Foltynewicz or Gausman, despite the fact that Gausman's at AAA and Folty's on the way back and things of that nature. And while Alex Anthopoulos will try to, you know, tell me all over the place that all these starters are going to somehow factor their way into the October picture and the rotation and give you all this organizational depth, this team is not worried about organizational depth. You have a team that basically is the second best right now in the National League behind the Dodgers. And what do you need to do to go get the Dodgers? Go get a starting pitcher. Go do it. But that's just one man's opinion, as we like to say. And again, we will play some interviews that I did earlier this week with a couple of guys across our network. We talked earlier this week with Peter Burns of the SEC Network. He'll give us an interesting preview in our second hour for SEC Media Days, which we'll have full coverage here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game next week from Hoover, Alabama. Georgia, Alabama, and everybody else going in, and the contingent will convene at the Winfrey Hotel in Alabama to at least usher in the 2019 college football season. We'll continue our discussion on the Falcons that we had the other night with Jarvis Davis. We were talking about who needs a Super Bowl to define their legacy more, Matt Ryan or Cam Newton? I'll ask him that question here in our segment coming up. And later on this hour, we'll do another baseball segment that doesn't have to do with the Braves, but it has to do with a story that will certainly be the pervasive one in baseball. If you're just waking up and didn't see this story last night, about a half hour from now, I'm going to give you a story that you had to see to believe in Major League Baseball. 404-741-0929, that's the phone number here on 92.9 The Game. Coming up, we'll talk to Jarvis Davis about the Falcons, who sit literally just over a week away from camp starting in Flowery Branch. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com and the radio.com app. Back inside the Kia Studios on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Will Polacek back here with you as we take you through getting closer and closer now to Falcons training camp. A little bit more than a week away, and I need to talk some ball. My man, Jarvis Davis, in studio to talk a little Falcons with us. Our main Falcons reporter, on-site guy, spends time out at Flowery Branch, of course, joins us to talk a little about the Falcons. Thanks for stopping by and being in studio with us, pal. Appreciate it.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me, man. You know, I haven't been in the studio in a while, so, you know, I had to figure things out, make sure I turn my microphone on and get this thing popping, man. I'm ready to roll. Let's do it, Jack.
So the first question I asked to begin the show, and I know that there might be an easy answer to this, but I asked who needs a Super Bowl more to validate their legacy, Cam Newton or Matt Ryan? I think the answer is Cam, because I think Matt is better than Cam when it comes to the kind of stats that the Hall of Fame voters look for. But who do you think needs a Super Bowl more to validate their legacy?
I mean, it's hard for me not to say Matt Ryan because, you know, growing up in this town, born and raised in this city, and just kind of seeing the maturation of number two as a quarterback and kind of see where he is right now and the numbers that he's been putting up. Because I want to take you a little back and kind of give you a little history as to why Matt, why I answered the question this way. And that's because Matt Ryan replaced a guy that electrified this city.
Yes.
And that's Mike Vick. Mike Vick brought all type of different types of people into the Georgia Dome every Sunday, and it was an absolute party. And he was a rock star in this city for the time that he was here. And for the way he went out with the whole dogfighting scandal and how everything went down and how public it was and going to prison and pouring salt in the wounds when he put on that green and black jersey for the Eagles and was an MVP candidate for about half the season, going up against Tom Brady. They were in discussions for the MVP for that year. All of those things went into what Matt Ryan had to replace.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to get that Super Bowl, because you can find people in this city that says that Matt Ryan is not a good quarterback.
Which I find abhorrent.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is absolutely, it's just ridiculous.
Right.
It is such a interesting dichotomy that you're faced with when you have these type of discussions. But I would definitely have to say that it is Matt Ryan because of the Mike Vick factor, and because I think that would kind of be like a put a stamp on his career as a whole, because I believe if Matt Ryan gets a Super Bowl, he's automatic shoe-in for the Super Bowl.
Exactly. Man,
for the Hall of Fame.
Do you think
automatic?
Do you think that people outside of Atlanta appreciate Matt Ryan more than the folks here do?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I don't want to alienate the people that do like Matt Ryan and love Matt Ryan. They love their quarterback. There are a lot of people like that. But a lot of times, you know, you're going to hear negativity a little bit more than the positivity. That's going to ring a little bit louder. You're going to hear that a little bit more so than the positivity. So I think that a lot of people, because he's not exciting,
mm-hmm.
he's kind of cornbread, you know, he's like white bread, you know, very normal. You know, you can barely get him to say anything.
Not controversial.
Colorful. Yeah. He's not going to say anything controversial. He's going to be the upstanding citizen. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's why you get all of the reaction that you get when you're talking about the get effing set or get the blank off the field. When he said that to the Panthers in the Georgia Dome. And people were excited about it because they want more of that. Like, people in this city love a show. They like the show. They like for people to be put on a show. So I think when you have who he is as far as a person, it doesn't necessarily match up with the city. But if you get that Super Bowl, man, I'm promise you he's going to win over a lot of people.
Jarvis Davis joining us in studio here as we talk Falcons on Sports Radio 92.9. The game, Flower Branch, is a little bit more than a week away. You know, I was at Super Bowl 51. I like to brag about that.
Okay.
But
it's not necessarily a good thing to brag about.
It's not a bragging point, but I'm just saying that, like, I was a believer in this franchise and in this organization even after what happened. And yet we sit here a couple of years after that, and the coach is on the hot seat. He's shuffled coordinators 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously some defensive deficiencies that are probably going to be replaced by guys who were hurt last year, but you don't know. How did we get here to where it seemed like they were on the precipice at the top of the mountain and now they're on the verge of possibly falling off if they don't have the kind of year in 19 that people expect?
First, I would have to say the loss of Kyle Shanahan as an offensive coordinator was the biggest point for me. That was the biggest point for me, and there was really nothing you can do about it. That's what made it such a big loss for them, because when you do well and you're coming off a Super Bowl run and you're averaging 33 points a game, and I don't think Kyle Shanahan is the type of guy. He's the type of guy that is a excellent play caller.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent play caller. For example, I was actually got a chance to catch the game as a fan. Sitting in the end zone, there was one particular time where they had come out in a particular formation. They had Julio Jones lined up in the slot, and they had Taylor Gabriel lined up on the outside. And Kyle Shanahan called a timeout. I'm assuming that he saw something in the defense what they were showing to him. And then as soon as they came out of their timeout, they flipped. They flipped Julio Jones and Taylor Gabriel. Mm-hmm. So they moved Taylor Gabriel into the slot. So he saw a matchup that he actually liked with Taylor Gabriel versus Julio Jones, because once you move Julio Jones around, the defense is going to respond. Either they're going to have a guy, a safety moving over the top, and he's going to draw their attention over there, or they're going to have somebody rolling the zone coverage and having somebody playing underneath him. So that particular, as soon as the ball snapped, boom, they give a quick pass. Matt Ryan gives a quick pass out to Taylor Gabriel. Boom, take it to the house for 6 points. And I'm just, and from that point on, I was just like, all right, Kyle Shanahan is not a likable guy by no means, because when he first came in, he butted heads a lot with Roddy White. And to come in and butt heads with a guy who's going to get his number put into the Ring of Honor, it rubbed a lot of people in the wrong way. But you cannot doubt what he brings to the table as a play caller. And I think that, 49ers are in good hands with him calling plays. So I think that was the biggest loss. And then you hire two coordinators that are first-year play callers. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was necessarily the right move. Marquand Manuel kind of worked out in the beginning because they were a top-10 defense. Mm-hmm. They were top-10 defense in his first year. But the Steve Sarkisian hire –
perplexed a lot of people.
That perplexed a lot of people. And there were a lot of people, and I was kind of somewhat on this train, but not necessarily all the way. Dan Quinn probably should have been put to the fire for bringing in a guy like Steve Sarkisian, especially coming off a Super Bowl run and the way this roster was currently constructed at that time. A
couple more for Jarvis Davis in studio here with us talking Falcons here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. You're home of the Atlanta Falcons as we sit more than a week away from training camp beginning in Flowery Branch. They have a lot of different decisions they're going to have to make on some guys. The Julio Jones thing's going to get taken care of, at least per Arthur Blank and per Julio telling us about Arthur Blank. But you got Jarrett, you got Beasley, you got Freeman, who obviously still has years left on the contract but has an opt-out after 20, and obviously with the running back position being so volatile, he's going to want some money too and some assurance. How do you either take care of these three guys or what do you do? How do you handle that situation with a lot of guys who are kind of wanting to know where the money's coming from and play the show-me-the-money game with them?
I mean, before I answer your question, I think this is a very interesting situation that teams find themselves in that draft well. Like, how is it that I do the system that you have set up in place to draft players? I draft the players from a pool from college football. The NCAA has a pool of players that I draft from. How is it that I do my job, I do what I'm supposed to do, and then I get to a point where I can't pay the players? That makes no sense to me whatsoever. I don't understand
the fallacy of the hard cap.
Yeah, I know, man. It is just amazing to me. But to answer your question, you're going to have to make a choice. And I think the choice is, and people might not like this, and I really like Grady Jarrett as a player, but I don't think they're going to pay him after this year. I think they're going to hit him with the franchise tag, and I don't think they're going to be able to work out a long-term deal. And as far as Devontae Freeman goes, I mean, no running back gets a third contract.
Right.
Not a big deal anyway. You're not going to see big money being doled out to a running back that has had concussion issues in his career.
Right.
That just doesn't happen. And there's almost you can make a case for them not giving, shouldn't have given him that money that he has right now. So I think that guys like Devondre Campbell, he's going to be a guy that I think is going to reap the consequences of drafting well, but he's going to go somewhere else and for sure get paid. He's definitely going to go somewhere and get paid. But I think that a guy like Julio Jones, I mean, you have to pay Julio Jones. That's not an option not to pay a guy like that.
Real quick, as we get you one last one here in our last little bit, what's the ceiling for this team? Tough schedule. Tough to ask a lot out of this team with this division, but what is your ceiling for them?
Wow, that's a great question. I think that this team, if the offensive line plays like I think they are capable of this year, I think this is an 11-win team. Mm. I think there's a possibility that they can get to the NFC Championship at least. Because when you have Devontae Freeman coming back and he looks healthy, he's looked healthy in the spring, that is a very key piece that the Falcons missed sorely last year.
Jarvis Davis, you can find his stuff at 929thegame.com. Of course, one of our chief Falcons reporters. Appreciate the time. Thanks for coming to the studio, man.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate Jarvis Davis joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. When we will come back, a story in Major League Baseball as we get back into it. If you missed this last night or you're just waking up, this is a story you have to see and hear to believe, because it is one that is not only truly inspiring, but the kind of script that Hollywood would have told you you couldn't believe. It comes your way next. Will Palacic here with you on Sports Radio 929 The Game and 929thegame.com. Sports Radio 929 The Game and 929thegame.com. Will Palacic here with you. Ken Roundtree producing on the other side of the glass. You can follow the show at Willie P Style. Ken has done me the favor of getting me back up to 2,300 on Twitter as he nods in approval. You can follow the radio station at 929 The Game and reach us 404-741-0929 on the phones, and also the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. We'll read some of those throughout the show as they warrant. We talked earlier about the Braves 5-3 win in San Diego, keeping the Braves 6 up in the division on Washington, 7.5 over Philadelphia. That gives them a nice win to kick off the second half here, part of their West Coast road trip. 3 in San Diego, 3 in Milwaukee, and then the 4 that will take place at SunTrust Park beginning Thursday through Sunday against the Washington Nationals. Julio Teheran takes on Joey Lucchesi coming up in game 2 of the series against San Diego, 8:40 our time, 5:40 with a twilight start at Petco Park. But last night, it's funny, I was going to basically wake up around 1:30 to rewatch the Braves, or at least watch the Braves on DVR replay, kind of basically so I could watch it almost in a fast pace, you know, with the DVR help, and kind of use that as the prep for the show, just because I knew we would talk about the first game after the break. And I saw something, just because when I woke up, I saw the game was still on the TV, and they had on the crawl that the Angels had a no-hitter going. And after further investigation on my Twitter, I was looking at some of the things that were being said, and I didn't realize that this was the first game that they played at Angel Stadium of Anaheim since Tyler Skaggs passed away. Tyler Skaggs, as you may remember, the 27-year-old pitcher from Anaheim who was taken from us so tragically and so senselessly by a disease or some sort of circumstance that has still not been released by the medical examiner in Southlake, Texas. The Angels were in Arlington to take on the Rangers. They postponed that game, as they rightly should have, and baseball still shaken by that. We saw Mike Trout wear the number 45 in the All-Star game, but they went a step further on Friday night to honor Tyler Skaggs' memory. Every player, not only on the 25-man roster, but also on the field staff, wore Tyler Skaggs' jersey. Not just his jersey number, his actual jersey with the Skaggs nameplate on the back. They brought his family in. His mother threw out the ceremonial first pitch. Mike Trout homered in the opening inning. And basically, the Angels were on their way to a rout, but with, of course, the added caveat of a no-hitter. Taylor Cole got the start. 2 1/3 innings, he was basically the opener, as the new custom is, to basically have a guy get through the first couple of times through the order. He did so without allowing a hit. gave way to Felix Pena. And he amazingly went the last 7 2/3. And the Angels completed the masterpiece.
And this is ground ball to second base. Rentheifel falls down, picks it up, fires the first. The Angels have no hit. The Seattle Mariners.
That's the call courtesy of Fox Sports West. Pena, the last 7 2/3, just one base runner allowed in the fifth inning. He retired the last 14 in a row, just the one base runner reaching for the Seattle Mariners as the Angels win 13-0. If it was just a no-hitter on a random day, it probably wouldn't resonate with us here in Atlanta. But it resonates throughout the sports world in a lot of symbolic ways, because there were a lot of, I don't want to say coincidences, because, and not to turn this into something, because I never like to bring these type of things up on the radio, but it gave you faith in a higher power if you don't already have it. Because today, it's funny, on the East Coast, if you were watching it on the 13th, today is Tyler's birthday. Would have been his 28th birthday on the 13th of July. They scored 13 runs, matching the birth date of Tyler Skaggs. The home run that Mike Trout hit in the opening inning was 454 feet. His number was 45. Just an amazing juxtaposition of what I wouldn't call coincidences, but what I would call fate. And the really, really cool moment at the end of the game that, if you haven't seen it, you have to watch the highlight shows, because it's all over the place, is that with those Tyler Skaggs jerseys, they not only were wearing them the entire game, each of the Angels players and coaching staff took those jerseys off and placed them on the mound after the game. And I'm sitting here watching this in my bed, and I couldn't control myself from sobbing. You couldn't watch that without crying. Here is Mike Trout, who spoke after the game regarding wearing the number 45 and the best way to honor Tyler Skaggs' memory.
We kind of got together in Texas, talked to Billy. You know, we're trying to figure out the best way to, you know, honor him. And, you know, we thought that the group, our team, should, you know, wear Skaggs and the number 45 on our back, and we all agreed on that and think that's the best way we could honor him. And, you know, everybody going out there and showing the support to his family.
They're showing it again on ESPN, and it's a goosebumps type thing. And they also put an amazing lithograph on the pitching rubber that covers the jerseys, and it's one of those really, really cool moments in sports that remind us why we do what we do. And it was just a really, really cool thing. There was a mural out in right field that honored his memory. And the real tragic thing is we still don't know what happened. They ruled out foul play. They ruled out suicide. There was an erroneous story that was trying to allege reasons that might have been nefarious involving his death. That story was retracted. I'm not even going to repeat the claim, because it sounds ridiculous, ludicrous, and insensitive to do that. It's just a tragedy. It reminds me of what happened with the Cardinals and Daryl Kyle a couple of years back. And Walt Jocketty, who was the general manager of the Cardinals at the time, had to go through that in a couple of instances, not just with Kyle, but also with Josh Hancock, in a much different scenario, just different situation, a player death in the middle of the season. And there was a great piece written in The Athletic about how he reached out to the Angels organization and basically was like, look, there's no playbook for this. There's no way that you can handle this. You have to basically take the utmost sensitivity going into this entire situation and you know, set up grief counseling, set up, you know, a center for the police to be able to at least conduct an investigation. Just all these things that they don't, that you don't think about when you're wanting to be an executive in baseball, and things that no general manager should have to think about. But just an amazing evening for the Angels family and the community of Angels fans who were felt by the unfortunate tragedy of Tyler Skaggs' death. But a no-hitter is thrown in the first game that the Angels play in their home ballpark. Scheduling quirk because of the fact that they were on the road to conclude the first half of the season. And, of course, you had the All-Star break, and they didn't get back home until the 13th and the 12th. So, as a result, their first game is one that not only will their fans remember for their entire lives, but I'm sure we'll remember as well as we continue here on just looking at that particular sentiment and that particular game. Just it's a good thing. It's a good thing for baseball that they were able to get that type of healing from that moment. Unfortunate and tragic that young man is gone, but hopefully this event will allow them to have the type of healing that they need to. Among other things in baseball last night, it was, as we said, the Braves winning over the Padres 5-3. Philadelphia loses last night, which means that Atlanta now has a 7.5-game lead over Philadelphia, who sits now in third place. As a result of that, though, of course, Washington had to win, so Washington shuts out Philly 4-0. Steven Strasburg with his 11th win on the season, 6 innings, all scoreless, 7 hits, scattered them with a walk and 6 Ks. As Washington improves to 48-42, they stay 6 games back. So there really won't be much chance for you to get any ground on Washington in this series. You'll have to wait until, of course, you see them face-to-face. The only thing I don't like about the Washington series is that Keuchel will be pitching the final game in Milwaukee. I would have wanted to see maybe him pitch against Washington, maybe push him back, maybe start Tehran, have Tehran start the All-Star break lid lifter instead. But either way, it's a it'll be interesting to see how this Braves rotation goes with Tehran, Soroka, as well as Fried and Bryce Wilson going into what should be a very interesting weekend at SunTrust Park next weekend, but have to get through this one first. Again, Tehran with the start against Lucchesi on Saturday evening in San Diego. There is something I just read that is the non-sports story that made me smile and smirk, although I'm not smiling or smirking because it'll make me angry if this actually comes to pass. Why? I'll tell you next. Sports Radio 99 The Game at 929thegame.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.